You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
On Kauai Soapbox today, we have a whole number of topics. In the studio with me, I have Sheila Young from Kauai Rescue Ranch. We're going to be hearing from her in just a moment. And then later on in the program, Mel Raposo, I believe he's going to be on the phone today as opposed to in the studio, but he's going to be kind of co-hosting a little bit in here with me. He's a little under the weather, so he's not going to come in and get anybody else sick, so we appreciate that, but today we're going to be talking about a number of topics. One is, how do we deal with our animals? Another is some of the events that are coming up with the houseless. And we've got issues that the county council are looking at, including the movement that's underway across the United States to amend the U.S. Constitution, a 28th Amendment that would go state by state. The county council has been looking at a resolution that asks to reverse Citizens United. This is about campaign finance reform, where the citizen was determined to be corporations are determined to be citizens that have the right to free speech, and free speech is measured by how much money they could spend. So that's a challenge. We're going to be talking about that. Today, I spent some time with the Whale Sanctuary people, where that deadline is coming up. Big things have happened with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and there's many other issues that we'll look at, a little bit about the rescue ordinance that's come up, and a little bit about the Maui moratorium, many different topics. And I will announce right now some of what we're going to be speaking with Sheila and others about has to do with hunting dogs. And on that note, letting hunters out there know that goat hunting opens July 3rd through August 13th. So if you would like to be registered to hunt goats, the feral goats along the Nepali in different areas, you need to register with the Department of Land and Natural Resources by this Friday, June 19th. So, Sheila.
Yes. Hello. Hi. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for coming in. And for the listener who does not know who you are, many of us, and the reason I have you in here is because you have a private, I'm not sure if it's a nonprofit. Is it a nonprofit?
Well, I'll explain all.
Okay, tell us about Kauai Rescue Ranch.
Okay.
And then tell us what it is, and tell us why you did it.
I think I should give everybody a little bit of background on who I am and what I've done in the community, and it goes way, way back to the Hanamaulu days at the Kauai Humane Society. And Laura Wiley at the time was working there. I think she was an assistant to the executive director. And myself and Patrick Doherty with local television went in there to do pet adoption shows for them to help them get homes for their animals. And then I think it was Hurricane Aniki came or something, and everything stopped.
So was that when it was at Salt Pond?
That was when it was in Hanamaulu.
Hanapepe.
Hanapepe, sorry, yeah. Okay. Hanapepe. I get those two mixed up. I lived here forever and I get them. So anyway, so that's kind of where I started with the Humane Society at that time. And then years went by and I had delivered some product for their skin stuff at the Humane Society as per Dr. Becky Rhodes. And while I was there, she and I talked, and I had told her that, you know, years ago I had done these TV shows for pet adoption. And she asked if I'd be willing to do that again because they needed some help. So I would love to. I love to do that, bring the animals out and help them get homes. It makes me feel really good. And so I started doing TV shows with them for about 2 years. And during that time, like I always do, if I see injured animals or animals that need help, I would, you know, bring them into the Humane Society. And then some strange things started happening, and red flags that I didn't really pay attention to at first.
What year are we talking?
We're talking probably like 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
And what that was I brought in a few dogs that were needing help, that were abandoned, that were very messed up and starving, all different kinds of situations, like I always have. And then what started happening was when I'd bring in these dogs, I was told, Sheila, don't even bother, we're just going to put it down. Well, I'm like, what do you mean you're going to put it down? So they basically, she was telling me, you know, it's the 4th of July coming tomorrow, we don't have the room, I'm just going to tell you right now, you leave the dog here, it's going to be put down. And here I am walking away from the Humane Society with this dog that was in horrible condition, and I'm like very confused, going, wait a minute, this isn't making sense. But I didn't pay attention at the time. Then I brought in another one, and I was told pretty much the same thing. Again, only it wasn't the 4th of July.
So you kept the dogs?
So I was able to get help for the dogs myself and find them homes and just do what I do, you know, on the side. But it was something that really sat with me for a long time and bothered me. So anyway, you know, going forward, I ended up moving into Michael Alonlong's doghouse. And next to 30 dogs, like 300 feet from 30 dogs. And I absolutely fell in love with every single one of them. And I learned an immense amount from Michael and his family on the hunting dogs and what makes them different. And I received an education, and I actually fell in love with this one hunting dog that I'm going to call Oreo. And Oreo and I became very, very close, and I started just taking Oreo as my own dog. And I fell in love with Oreo as a puppy, and Oreo stayed with me and hung out with me. And then Oreo started chasing chickens in the yard and becoming a nuisance. And I didn't want Oreo to go into the hunting cages because he wasn't used to it. So I thought, you know, I'll take Oreo to the Humane Society, and he's beautiful puppy, so beautiful and cute, and somebody will definitely fall in love with him. And it was a hard decision for me to make, but I knew it was his chance to have a good home. So I took him to the Humane Society, and I filled out a piece of paper that's standard if you want to get your dog back. If it doesn't receive a home, you fill out a paper that says, you know, if the dog doesn't get adopted, please notify me. So I had filled out that paper, and I was every day for 2 weeks wondering, you know, did Oreo get a home or not? And then I received a call at 11 o'clock in the afternoon by Dr. Becky Rhodes. And she said, Sheila, if you don't pick up your dog by 3 o'clock, we're putting it down. That was 4 hours notice. She made the call at 11 o'clock at, she made the call at 11 o'clock in the afternoon, told me at 3 o'clock it would be put down. I didn't receive the message until 5 o'clock. I cannot tell you the agony that I went through, the pain and suffering I went through, and I got extremely ill and had to go to the emergency hospital twice. During that time, what happened to me was, believe it or not, my mouth, my hands, and my feet swelled up to the point where I couldn't talk, me not talk. I couldn't walk, me not walk. I couldn't use my hands, and the Olanolan family and my friends had to literally feed me and help me through that. During that time, I was locked inside my body. I created Kauai Rescue Reserve Ranch for hunting dogs and horses. And the reason I did that was because I saw very clearly that they needed help, they needed a place to go, and I was going to provide it for them, and I was on a mission for Oreo, so that his life would not be in vain. So I created Kauai Rescue Reserve Ranch for hunting dogs and for horses. And
and that's in Kilauea?
No. So what I did was I went under a fiscal sponsorship on the Big Island, Rainbow Friends Animal Sanctuary. I used, I was under their nonprofit. That was the only way I could get in to do this immediately. I didn't have time to go through all the paperwork. So that got me in. I have one of the best attorneys, Lanny Sinkin, and he has been assisting me through this whole thing. So I put on a huge function to try and raise money. I was out there in the community to television shows. I had found a property I wanted, and I was moving in the direction pretty quickly. And I did a television show at the Kauai Humane Society with the vet tech at the time, Ellen, and Michael Alon Hunter was there along with Thomas from KKCR, Jungle Jukebox. And we went to the Kauai Humane Society. I put on the whole entire show, got everybody together, and I was pretty much the host of the show. And while the show was going on, before the show started, maybe the night before or something, Michael had mentioned that he thought a good idea would be to create a website where all the hunters could look to see if their dogs were there. And then they didn't have to make the drive down there. They could immediately go to the website, see if their dog was there. If their dog was there, they could immediately go down and get it. I go, oh, that's a great idea. Let's talk about that. I mean, that's a great idea. So I mentioned it to an employee there, and I'm not going to mention any names. And I was told not to mention it. I was told that it wasn't going to happen and not to bring it up. I said, I already told Michael to mention it. And she just said, Sheila, they're not going to do it. I'm just going to tell you right now. I was pretty much in shock, and there was nothing I could say, and Michael brought it up. And when Michael brought it up...
Brought it up to who?
Brought it up, you know, when Michael mentioned on camera that he had talked to me about the idea that and that it would help them tremendously, and I said, of course, you know, I said to him, what would help is it would immediately get a lot of dogs out. Well, she had made a statement on that show, and we're going to be having that television show on my Facebook soon. That's what I'm working on. She made a statement saying that about 50% of the dogs that they had at the Humane Society were hunting dogs. So by creating this website, it would immediately remove these dogs from their kennels right away and give them more space. So I didn't understand at the time why... wouldn't they want something like that? I mean, that's a great idea. And we have hunters. We need the hunters.
So what was the reason?
The reason was never... the reason was never mentioned. And I never... I, at the time, never pursued that reason.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Ian's in the house with me. Sheila Young from Kauai Rescue Ranch Reserve is in here speaking about what was the piece that brought her to doing that. And then so, Sheila, we're going to move past this pretty quickly because of our timing. But so did you ever learn why?
No, I did not.
Okay, do you
But
have,
I had my suspicion.
And what is that?
I'd rather let Michael Alon, who's going to hopefully be calling in at around 4:30, discuss that with you.
Okay, so we'll hear that then. And to place this into context for the listener that might just be tuning in and hasn't listened to a few other shows, a couple weeks ago I had the executive director and the president of the board of Kauai Humane Society. There is stress in the animal care community right now. We've had about a third of the staff from the Humane Society has made a written statement to the board that they're unhappy with how it's being managed by the executive director. It's come down to about a little bit too much euthanasia. We had them in speaking last Thursday on Out of the Box. Jonathan had a number of people that are representing the concern side.
Can I just interject something? One thing that concerns me now, looking back at that television show, the 50%, or, you know, at least half, she said, she didn't say 50%, she said at least half of the dogs they have are hunting dogs. So I don't understand, what I don't understand is, that means if they have, I think they quoted 75% euthanization of dogs, that means that the majority of the dogs that are being euthanized are hunting dogs. That's a sore subject.
Well, I've been looking at the numbers, and the bigger amount of euthanization is cats than dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, but there's quite a lot. And I had an experience this week that was very telling to me about the issue there. As a host that isn't directly involved in this particular challenge, think, okay, well, what, you know, what is going on? And I try not to take too strong of a bias. An example happened from just a week ago Monday, and then it's a small community up here. A few people told me about it. I spoke to the father of a child who went in there, and the reason this is so relevant to me is that they're under the gun right now. And so this, making it very short, I'll give a few details, but the very short story is a 10-year-old girl from the community who is dealing with a very powerful challenge, like her mother being in the hospital for a very prolonged time with serious health issues, and the family deciding that getting her some kittens would be something that would help her.
And it would.
And it would. You know, to give something, mm-hmm. somebody something to love is a really good medicine. And they have a very appropriate home situation, mm-hmm. couple few acres, off a small road, on a dirt road.
Can I move in?
You know what? It's a little piece of heaven there. But so they brought this young woman into the Humane Society to get a couple of kittens. And so she was brought into the kitten area, and she took about an hour interviewing the kittens, trying to decide which two could get along and which ones that she would really like. And so it was a point of joy for her.
Mm-hmm.
So after finding these two kittens, she's like, okay, I've got them. So then she's confronted with a battery of questions. And her father was there, but, you know, what are you going to feed them? How are you going to, you know, deal with them? And the request and the requirement was that these cats would live 100% inside the house. And they said, we have a big screened-in porch. We have, you know, we have area. They said, are you going to let them out? They said, well, yeah, you know, we plan to let them out. There's room. Anyway, they couldn't seem to pass the negotiation, so they said, think about it and come back tomorrow. And the dad was like, well, we have thought about this quite a lot. And he explained to the staff member what the challenge was that was being addressed emotionally for this child. So they came back the next day and, again, were unable to pass this threshold. So a manager, another woman, came out to talk to him. Then so they asked to have the executive director who came out. And then so at that point, this 10-year-old was told she was not suitable to have a cat. And then she just was devastated, broke down, crying really hard, had a hard time. The dad was feeling like, why didn't you go through these questionings before you had the kid go and pick these cats? So, you know, like when I think about it, do you euthanize the kittens or do you let them go with a 10-year-old girl with a solid home who's going to love them? You know, so I think, wow, if even this really stable family doesn't cross that threshold, you know, who does? And to keep a cat inside all the time.
I don't mean to interrupt you, mm-hmm. but I am very glad that all of this is coming out now. I have been, while I was doing the television shows back then, I met a lot of the employees and got to know a lot of them. After I stopped doing the show and went into Kauai Rescue Reserve Ranch and the reasons that I did, I had several of the employees back then coming to me with a very similar to what's happening now. This is a repeated pattern. I'm just going to say that it's a Pandora's box. There's a lot going on that's not right. A lot. Not just what you're talking about, which is very, very common. But there's a lot more going on, too. And I think as we get into it with people feeling comfortable telling the truth in their stories, because for some reason people are intimidated by the Humane Society. So it's kind of a touchy thing. That's why I want to, you know, just thank you for the way that you interview. I know it's hard, and you do it very well.
And I think, you know what, people do really appreciate the intention of the Humane Society. And what I said over and over in the last show was that it's not an easy job. I wouldn't want that job of deciding who lives and dies. I want to give a happy ending for this. Is this young girl, even though she was not able to get the kittens of her choice from the Humane Society, she was referred to the Kauai Community Cat People, and she got two kittens. And so different kittens, but
right.
The Kauai Community Cat People are another parallel organization, mm-hmm. the way Kauai Reserve Rescue
right.
Ranch or Rescue
right.
Ranch Reserve is. So we have individuals who are moving out into the community.
And can I interrupt again?
Sure, and then I got a caller.
Okay, and I want to bring that up. I think because of what's going on with the Humane Society right now, people are scared to bring in animals. And so what we need to do is, I think, in our own backyards, like we have a woman in our area who helps animals, and the kids come and help and participate. In our own backyards, there might be somebody in the neighborhood who can do a little foster thing, and the kids can come and help out, and it can be a really beautiful win-win. Because yes, I believe the Kauai Humane Society is overloaded.
Yeah, and although they are able to give the shots,
and
this could help. So let's take this caller. Okay. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hi. I just have a question for y'all. I don't understand what the benefit would be for the Humane Society to euthanize them, as opposed to giving them, you know, away to a good home like this obvious tenant-year-old, giving them away to caring for them and stuff. Do they get, like, federal kickback? Or I don't know if I checked in
well,
late.
Well, question.
I think, you know, it's hard to really know. I think part of it is there is pressure from bird people that don't want cats outside. Because when cats are outside, they can kill birds. And so that there is a certain amount of concern that cats should never be outside. I've heard that discussion, though. It's almost inhumane to the cat. So that might be one angle.
I also think that you know, and this I've got to say for the Humane Society, they are extremely overloaded, one-man band pretty much. There are foster people in the community. I think now that we're realizing the tremendous overload, that we can, as a community, come in and help the Humane Society by creating more foster situations and opportunities for people to work with animals in different ways that are going to alleviate the Humane Society and of some of their, you know, overload. And so,
like your hunting project. I mean, I don't understand what, I mean, maybe we got to listen, wait for Mike to come on, but I don't understand why they're not allowing the community, you, to come in for the hunting dog rescue. And
well, no, I need to
get them and
I just need to, excuse me, I need to finish up where Kauai Rescue Reserve Ranch is now. That was when I was just getting the project started. I was looking for a location to put the hunting dogs and the horses. It was not working because the community didn't have the money to support the project. So what I'm doing now is I'm going hands out in the community. I go direct to ranches. I work with the hunters, and I try and help them. Everything is confidential. Everything comes through my Facebook is where I get the rescues and situations. And I help. I go to location. I have a team of people, veterinarians, Dr. Sims being one of them. I love him. He has helped us tremendously, and others that come and help me as I need it. I put together, because I've been active with animals for many years, the ranches, I have a lot of connections and a lot of people that come to my aid when I need to help animals, and they do it freely of their own time with and they do not charge anything. So I'm more of an out there community person, hands-on with the hunters and the horses, and I get them whatever they need. Silver Falls and other places participate by helping us with foods and donations and things like that as I need it.
Wait a minute. Don't hunting dogs have chips and stuff like that already?
Some do, some don't. Some do, some don't.
Yeah. It sounds like a tangled bed of worms here. I'm missing some part of the story, so I guess I'll just listen to the rest of the show because there's just something not computing.
What is the challenge? Like, it just doesn't make sense that
it doesn't make sense that the Humane Society is making it so difficult for people, one, to volunteer great ideas like, you know, putting dogs on the website, those that don't have the chips and the hunters could call the Humane Society, and also as well as cutting people out of the loop because they don't want cats outdoors. All of a sudden they're in charge of making the decisions whether cats should be indoor or outdoor animals on Kauai. I mean, I'm just missing. That's what I mean. There's There's always more to the story.
Well, it's just surprising, and so I just brought that up because that was something that came to my attention directly that happened this week while all this heat is coming down. So I was really surprised, like going, if you know, they're getting a tremendous amount of community pressure. So, you know, it's such a small community, something like that happens and everybody's aware of it and thinking about it, you know, and not everybody, but a small the community that surrounds this kid. So I think that essentially what you're asking is what most of the community is asking. Now, Sheila is a little bit closer to the animal rescue, or a lot closer to the animal rescue mentality than I am. I have animals, but the staff at the Humane Society has raised a red flag, and they're saying, we're concerned. And so probably most of the community feels like you do, caller. We're saying, well, we don't get it. You know, why? So we listened to the directors that were in here. Last week we heard from some of the people who were concerned. That included staff, people, and a range, you know, donors. And then today we're just doing a portion of our show on this topic, but we're looking at it, and I think that what we're going to do is we're going to come up with a few suggestions is what's going to be in the next 15 minutes, because it's not about tearing these people down. It's about how do we solve the problem.
Right, Sheila, right. We know the problem now. Now let's start working.
Okay, I would like to express something. First of all, we live on an island where we have mass amounts of pigs. Without the hunters and the hunting dogs, this island would be overrun with pigs doing damage all over the place. Okay, what I would like to see happen is for the Humane Society to create a special division for the hunters and the hunting dogs and dealing with their specific issues, and bring unity between the Humane Society and the hunters, instead of animosity with things like not refusing to give their dogs back. And then a lot of these kids that get their dogs in there, they have to pay these ridiculous fines of no leash law. What hunting dog have you ever seen that hunts on a leash? So there needs to be certain, and that pisses the hunters off. Now these kids go in to get their dogs and they can't afford the fines. They have to release their dogs and their dogs get euthanized. So there's a lot of anger in the local community regarding their hunting dogs. And without the hunters and without these dogs, like I said, we would have a big mess on their hands. They need to be deserved. And I'm going to tell you, for me, I love these hunting dogs with my soul. And I want them all to be VIPs, very important pets. I want them to be all spoiled rotten. That's my goal. You know,
well, I think those hunting dogs, there definitely needs to be a clause there. If you could prove that it was a hunting dog, you know, some sort that you were hunting, or just saying that you did. And also getting these kids who are under distress with parent sickness or whatever, if somebody takes the time to go in there and check out animals and then comes back the next day again, you know, with all the stuff they have on their plate, somebody who's listening, I hope, has some kittens, some darling kittens, and they... Somebody needs to give that little girl so she didn't have to go back to the Humane Society.
The Kauai community cat people gave her two little kittens.
So. Awesome. Perfect. So we got
thank
that
you.
Problem
thank
taken
you.
Care
so
of.
So thank you so much.
Yeah, good calling. Luck and thank you. I appreciate all you do. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. And when you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A Kilauea, Sheila Young is in the studio with myself, Felicia, and Ian, and we have a caller on the line. We are talking about animals and the challenge with the Humane Society. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. Is it there?
Michael, Alon, would be a good time to call in now if you're listening.
We are getting some calls in and we'll be taking them. Let's see. Aloha, you're on the air.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, at one point in time, about a decade ago, I remember the Humane Society was, you know, kind of working with in the regards with hunters, where if you registered your dog as a hunter, they wouldn't castrate them, and they would call you to come up. So it must be now, and I got kind of a weird story to add to this. So this might be a current issue with the people in the Humane Society, because I pick up cat food for one of the ladies. I know I do her yard, but for some reason she can't drive well, and I pick up her cat food from a store in Puyi. And that's the one right there by, right across Mark's Place. And they always rotate dogs from the Humane Society in there. Like, you know, they adopt them for the day, they leave them in the store.
Right.
And this really beautiful pit bull. I mean, he captured my heart. And his story was sad because his owner had moved back to the mainland, and you could tell that the owner put some love and time in. And the dog was, like, heartbroken. And so I kind of was contemplating getting them. You know, I take pit bulls.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest daughter was down for it. And then I ran into one of the ladies that works there at the, of all places, at the bowling alley. And I asked her about the dog, and she got and told me that something was up because, you know, her roommate went to adopt the dog, and the Humane Society said, oh, it's at the store. So he called the girl up, going, oh, you guys get the dog at the store? And she's like, nope. And she was at work. And so, you know, they looked into it, and for some reason, they didn't want to give up that dog, bro, for some reason. So I don't know the rest of that story, but this was pretty current. So like something freaky is going on currently.
So
with the rest of the team there. I don't know any of the backstory.
Thank
but
you.
I have been going to the Indian Society for a pretty long span of time. And I remember at one point, it seemed like they was working with hunters.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that piece, Ev. I have a handful of calls holding.
Oh, sure, and I got to get going, too. I just wanted to weigh in with that story.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for holding. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
So, bottom line, it's about solutions and transparency.
Thank you.
And accountability, because what's in the balance is the health and welfare of all of these beautiful animals.
Thank you.
And so solutions are very important, and transparency. If all of us in the community are conscious, aware, and make those folks accountable, open your office to us. Let's see what's going on. Why can't we have those kittens? You know, yeah, okay, keep them inside sometimes and be watchful of them with the birds. I have a bird nest right outside my door. I've got cats. You can teach animals to be wise. You can teach them not to kill the birds in your particular area. There are ways to control certain animal issues, but let's have those folks at the Humane Society be accountable for their actions, because that little 10-year-old girl, oh my God, my heart goes out to her. By the way, if anybody wants kittens, I have one mama cat that I rescued from down at Anini Beach. She became pregnant. She's got 5 kittens right now. They're healthy. They're happy. They're in a baby playpen right now. I'm going to keep 2 of them. There are 3 that will be available to anybody who has a loving heart and a loving home.
Do you have a number?
I do have a number. It's 808 area code, 212-4450. And my name is Victoria.
Okay, Victoria, thank you so much for calling.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. It's Andy Parks.
Oh, hi, Andy.
Oh, Andy, thank God.
I got through the busy signal.
Oh, hi, Andy. Thank you so much.
Sure. I've been doing, you know, whatever reporting I can on this, talking to an awful lot of people. And there's a couple of things going on, but I think basically, you know, for the last, watching it for the last 20, 30 years, there's a really bad governance problem, and I think it all stems from that. And in addition, right now, we have a really bad perception problem, whether deserved or not, with the ED.
Executive Director?
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten emails and Facebook messages from so many people who've had horrific experiences.
Very horrific.
And, you know,
I'm sorry for all of you.
Let me say that, you know, I mean, I'm not one of the, you know, people who call in, oh, save all the kids and puppies, we can't kill anybody. You know, I mean, I can understand that euthanasia is going to happen unless no-kill facilities are set up and maybe we don't have it together or whatever it is. But it's an attitude problem. it's almost as if these people are telling me that we have Cruella de Vil in charge of the Humane Society. Somebody actually did a little Facebook page, you know, along those lines, you know, with the Cruella de Vil driving to the salt pond.
And she's the woman
of the, and,
101
you know,
Dalmatians.
Rather than try and acknowledge these problems and deal with it, the board, it just stonewalls that. They've actually, they've gone to a couple of examples that I know of and complained to Facebook about people's websites, and it turned out that, you know, they were not following the Facebook rules, but they were complained about because they were critical of the Humane Society, and specifically
Penny. Mine being one of them.
And yours was one, and there was another one that was a satire site that used a name close to the ED's name, and they, you're not allowed to do that. And that's the one that had the Cruella de Vil thing. But, you know,
let's get
the
back
main
to the
problem is that the board has no responsiveness to the community, and this is what happens with nonprofits.
Okay, can I interrupt for a moment?
Like
one moment.
Have a self-appointed board,
Andy,
rather than a democratically elected board from a paid membership. And I think that's the root of the problem here.
Correct. You made a point on Facebook on one of the comments. You came up with a solution to a board that could work for a win-win. Can you remember what that was?
Well, that's exactly it. We have a lot of things like that. KKCR fought back and forth for years until they finally started to elect some of the board members. I'm not sure how many are elected now. Many in the community fought with HOIKE for years and could never get them to change. All of these community-type organizations need to be responsive to the community, and they all go, well, somebody might take over. Well, you know, look at the...
But so is your suggestion an elected board?
The board,
an
yes.
Elected board. So who would elect them? Would it be the...
The membership. There are certainly enough supporters of the Humane Society now. You know, you pay your $20 a year, you become a member, and you vote for the board of directors. It's really that simple.
And maybe they could do that through a website, some way. You know, you got to think of what does it cost to do. KIUC has an elected board. And
KIUC does it. The credit unions do it. League of Women Voters does it. Almost most successful nonprofits that where you don't find this kind of pilikila all the time do that kind of thing. It's when the board gets insular and they forget who they're serving, they start to serve themselves, and they start to reappoint themselves and appoint friends of theirs, and they don't see the bigger picture, and they do this kind of circle the wagon thing that the Humane Society has done here. I mean, you can't ignore, these may seem like anecdotes, but, you know, when you put a bunch of anecdotes together, it's called research. That's basically what it is. And you can't deny that no matter what has to be done about euthanasia and what the policies are, how you arrive at those policies is more important than anything else. In addition to the board, the bylaws of these types of nonprofits are passed by the membership so that you really get the community's input, not just sit there and tell them what you think maybe, and then they go behind closed doors and do what they want. And that's the failings of these types of nonprofit boards. And unless the Humane Society reforms, this goes on over and over again. It's gone on with the last three executive directors. There's been horrible stuff, and what they've learned is if they circle the wagons, we'll survive this. And it's just going to happen again.
And
I can't see the
cover up
TV
after
lasting
cover up
very
after
much
cover
longer
up.
With the community image out there. That's, you know,
no,
partially,
time's
self,
up.
Partially
time's
deserved.
Up I think we're
but
on the
But it's the
team.
Board behind her that is really the problem here.
I agree.
So your prime recommendation is an elected board, and that you think that would make the change.
I'm sure it would make the change. It would involve the community, and it would make it so that the board is responsive to the community. You know,
win-win.
You know, adopt the kind of bylaws that, you know, are quasi-governmental, where you have open meetings, and, you know, you don't just go behind closed doors at the drop of a hat. you know, kind of thing, and make these kinds of decisions, and involve people. You'll find that you get much more, you know, it can be a boost to fundraising. It can be a boost to just support for the place. And you know, look at Sheila's problem. At a lot, this is a common story of people who have ideas and want to volunteer, and all they're looking for is a little emotional support or you know, organizational support. They're not even looking for money in order to deal with a certain problem, and they can't get it because there's no democratization of the board. There's no place to go with those ideas.
So it sounds like this idea that you're saying might be also applied to other boards that are having challenges with other organizations.
Most certainly. It's universal. It's not just on Kauai.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Sure.
Thank you, Andy.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You are on the air.
Hi. I've been listening to the show and following the controversy for since the beginning, and wanted to comment some things that Andy said. One thing that struck me is him saying the last three executive directors, and I think that speaks volumes, and that one director was called out for over-reporting euthanasia numbers, and the current one is being called out for under-reporting. And my biggest issue with all of this is that the number of animals being euthanized is 380. And if that makes people outraged...
I don't know that that's correct. I'm going to pull up I've got the report from the Humane Society. That sounds really low.
The number of animals being euthanized, sorry, 4,380.
Okay, yeah, that's a much bigger number.
Yeah,
4,380.
Yeah. Exactly. My point with that number is if that sparks outrage, it absolutely should. My problem with all of this is that it shouldn't spark outrage for the head of the Kauai Humane Society. What it should spark outrage is people such as one of your callers earlier who said, I have a cat. She had kittens.
She found the cat at Anini Beach that was pregnant.
But she didn't find it pregnant. She said it became pregnant. Animals don't become pregnant. They become pregnant because people do not take the time to spay and neuter.
Those are just some of the solutions that are we need to, you know, jump up on our spay and neuter program, and these are things that need to be done on, you know, and supported by the Humane Society.
So caller,
they are supported by the Humane Society, and I've heard repeatedly people saying, oh well, they raise the cost, it's too much. If you cannot afford $50 to spay or neuter your pet, I have news for you. You cannot afford to take care of a pet properly for the duration of its lifetime. It's a drop in the bucket.
So if I'm interpreting or hearing you correctly, you're bringing up one critical element. You're saying, hey, when we have this many animals that are euthanized, we need to be more responsible and impact their breeding, sterilize the animals. Are you saying that you feel that the dialogue is unfair about what's happening inside? Or are you just concerned? Are you just looking for a solution?
I'm looking for several solutions. And just to give you a little bit of background, I'm a regular volunteer at the Humane
Society.
Okay,
great. All right.
And many of the things that have been said are disturbing, because when they talk about animals not being fed, animals, you know, yes, or last week on Jonathan's show, sitting in their own feces. I volunteer there every week, and there is a group of us, and at least one of us, but usually more than that, are there on a daily basis. If we saw that, if that in fact was happening, shame on those employees that waited a year to just make an absolute ruckus. To me, if I saw that happening, I would report it to the director. If I didn't get an appropriate response, I would report it to the board. And if I didn't get a response, I would report it to the newspaper in a matter of days. I wouldn't wait for a year. I've never seen that tourists, travelers, community members go into that Humane Society every day. It's open. It's there for you to see it.
Well, I go in there not super regularly, but, you know, probably once a quarter, and I'm not appalled. You know, I go in there and I feel okay.
You know, the fact of the matter is there's a huge overpopulation. It's a huge burden, and I know that your guest today is talking about the hunting dogs, and I agree with her in terms of we do have a pig problem. Where I have a problem is that hunting dogs are not disposable. They don't have to have food. They don't have to be kept in these cramped kennels, and not all are. Not all are at all.
No, not all are.
But many are. And they don't have to be starved. They don't have to be full of fleas. They don't have to be kept in dire circumstances. And they don't have to be discarded when they get lost up in the mountains. These dogs aren't microchipped. And where I'm going with this entire thing...
But you're speaking in general. You're speaking in general.
That is a huge part of the dogs that come into the Humane Society. And I say that from experience because I work with these dogs every single week. Every week, and have been doing so for months and months and months. And it's a huge part of it. And we as the taxpayers, we are the ones that are taking on that burden. So if we're going to talk about the hunting dogs, then we need to realize that they need to be treated in a respectable fashion, and they need to be taken care of, and they can't just end up in Coquet. They can't just end up in the woods and be discarded.
Yeah, and I think that it goes back to the idea that what I would like to see is a special division within the Humane Society for the hunters and the hunting dogs dealing with their issues and providing, you know, good quality foods, kennels, whatever it is that they need. I would like to see every single hunting dog on this island being treated like a very important pet, a VIP. I love them. They're the most sweetest dogs I've ever, and believe me, I've been around dogs all my life, that I've ever been around in my life. My heart, I am on a mission for them. And so I agree with you, and yeah.
And I agree with you too, because I own one of those discarded hunting dogs.
Yes,
and he is absolutely the most gentle soul.
I know.
But my question to you is, have you contacted Penny? Because if you haven't, I would love, I know who you are, and I actually, we're friends on Facebook, but I have had meetings with Penny. A group of us meet with her on a regular basis, and I found her to be open. I've found that when we've brought concerns to her, that she's acted on many of them immediately. There are really good things happening. And Felicia, I know we're running out of time, but the other thing I want to say is the thing that bothers me about all of this is people that are encouraging others to withhold donations from the Humane Society, just stop your funding, to stop your support. You're not hurting Penny by doing that, and you're not hurting the board by doing that.
Yeah.
You are hurting the animals that desperately
do
not have enough money to as it is. And by people withholding funding, that's only making matters worse. The ways that you can help is to fund more, to volunteer, to foster an animal, to take animals on field trips, to go see for yourself what the Humane Society is about, because I sincerely believe that many people that are signing petitions and are complaining have never set foot in there and have never met Penny or any of the employees.
There. Caller, I appreciate all of those suggestions. I think that's really good. I want to clarify, nobody has heard me say on this show, nor have I had anybody on this show that says don't donate. I have not done that. And I did have Penny in on the show, and I did go in and speak to her and have a dialogue with her when this issue came up. So we are treating her with maximum respect.
That was not directed at you. That was directed at the whole movement in general, and people that are purporting to be the biggest animal lovers are actually in fact by their actions.
Well, thank you for calling.
Hurting the animals in a way that will take a long time to recover. It's exactly the opposite. They're not accomplishing anything other than hurting the animals at the Humane Society.
I appreciate your feedback. I want to thank you for being a volunteer in there and helping and sharing what your viewpoint is. And I don't mean to hurry you off the line. I have another person who's been holding for a while, and the topic's almost done.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you so much for holding.
Hi. Aloha.
Aloha.
My name is Michael from Haena.
Hi, Michael. Thank you.
How are you?
Good. So you have hunting dogs?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm on my cell phone. Might be a little bit bad.
Yeah, we have a little bit of a breakup connection. Are you able to move to a little bit stronger place? I really want to hear what you have to say. And for the listener, I have known Michael from Haena for decades, and I know that you do treat your dogs very well, and you have a pretty good number of them. So have you had an opportunity to observe this issue?
Not really, but I've been hearing people talk about them. That's about all. I haven't seen anything on computers.
Okay, and Sheila, did you have a question for Michael?
Basically, there's things that go on with the hunting dogs and the Humane Society that have really upset a lot of the hunters, and the hunters that do take good care of their animals and love their animals. And I'd really love it, Michael, if you could talk about some of the issues that we've spoken about, like the no leash laws and when they run away and when you've picked up your animals, and you know, issues that you've had to deal with at the Humane Society, things that, you know, that trouble you, that I would like you to express those if possible.
Well, I think a lot of hunters have, you know, they lose the dog, they leave the shirt or dog trail or something for the dogs to come back to, and then when they come back in a couple hours or the next morning, and the dog's not there, but the dog is stepping up the shirt, the dog gone, people pick them up, not thinking nothing, mostly probably tourists or could be people from the island who see a dog sitting down. When they take them, we don't know where the dog is. We hunt for the dog all over for days. And then later on, we find out that it's at the pound. By looking there, it costs, what, $50, $60? If it's not even spayed or new, it costs even more money. So I think there's probably a way that the Humane Society could probably put something, post up on a website somehow, on the TV, that dogs that are coming in on the weekend, put them on TV, somebody can see, they'll tell the next person, oh, I see this dog on TV. I mean, it's at the Humane Society, instead of the hunter going crazy looking for his dog, wasting time.
Like a website or something. A website that shows.
There's got to be a way to.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it costs a lot of money to pick up a dog after a week. You don't know where he's at, and then you go there, it costs you money. And you got two of them, let's say, I don't know, $50 in that spade. It costs $60 or something. That's $120 for two dogs, let's say, if it costs $60. That's food in the mouth for your family, you know. That's a high charge, and not everybody spayed or neutered their dog. I don't want to be neutered, man. I still want my kids too, but I feel like that's too much.
Yeah, I want to say, because we had a caller before saying everybody needs to be spayed or neutered, and I get it. I have a school, and with my students, we go to Scott Sims Vet, and we watch and help with the spaying and the neutering, because we can be so insulated from what that really means, you know. And I always look at it and go, what are we going to do to humans in a little bit? There's too many of us, and we can't feed us because we don't have enough money, you know. So it's a challenge. So
I know they have a hard time controlling humans, but they're trying to control the dogs.
Yeah. So any last thoughts, Michael?
Humans have more sense than a dog, so you spayed a dog, man.
Yeah.
Some should be spayed and neutered, and some owners don't want to get them. So what if they pick up and then you charge the guy because he refused to spay them or neuter the animal?
Michael, I think, you know, being around you guys for as long as I have and watching, I think what disturbs me a lot is just, you know, a lot of the no leash fines and things like that, you know, leash laws and things like that I think should be waived for hunters and hunting dogs. But a lot of times they have euthanized a lot of our hunting dogs, and that hurts. You know, that really hurts. And I think that we need to address that too.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of hunters out there that should be on the radio.
I do too.
There's a whole bunch.
You know, without participating, you guys, we can't make changes. So I really wish you would call in.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think it's hard for everybody that wants to be on the radio to call you guys. You know, but
yeah, and I do have someone holding.
They all have a lot of things to say.
Yeah,
good and bad.
So thank you. I have another caller holding.
Okay.
Thank you, Michael.
Hello.
Mahalo. Aloha. Thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Yeah. I have a question and a comment, but something that last caller just said really got into my ears. What is this policy now? If your hunting dog gets taken to the pound, you have to ransom the dog if it's not spayed or neutered?
It costs more, yes.
They're actually charging you more because your dog is not spayed or neutered. What?
And they charge
more. Does
anyone
know the rationale behind this?
Charged more if they're not chipped. Charged more if there isn't a collar on. They have a grid system, so they try and financially encourage certain behaviors. So they.
And who gave them this power?
Okay, maybe the board. I'm not 100% sure. Sheila's saying the board.
Everything. Well, they're the battery that makes everything go.
Okay, and to Andy's comment, they're not
exactly.
An elected board.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's frightening enough that they're ransom. They're basically what's the word? Not ransom. Extorting people to have their pets spayed or neutered.
That's correct.
Whether you want to or not.
The registration on the pet is higher if it's not spayed or neutered. And I am not a hunter, but what I do understand is that certain dogs are bred as excellent hunters, and that they provide a service. They help to keep the pigs.
I grew up on this island from a very, very, very young boy with all of my family, friends, cousins. Everybody around me were hunters. And they put food on the table with their hunting dogs, and so this is part of my culture on a DNA level. And hearing what your guest, her feelings regarding hunting dogs is one of the more enlightened people that I've heard on your show. God bless her for thinking that way and for helping the hunters that way, because there is a fundamental ideology at the Humane Society that is. They are rabidly and viciously hateful of hunters and hunting dogs. There's something, it's something to do with their Walt Disney mentality that it is absolutely evil to sick an animal onto another animal for the purpose of killing it and eating it. There's a sickness there that my hunting friends have had to deal with for probably the past couple of decades. And so the reason I was going to call you before some of the other callers ahead of me started me off on this other tangent was I have a feral cat that adopted us. It's a male, and I want to take it in to the Humane Society. I thought about taking it into the Humane Society to get it neutered, but now I'm terrified. Because you're going to tell me, is this going to be an indoor cat? Well, no. It's an outdoor cat. It was born outdoors. So what are they going to do? Are they going to refuse me the cat? Are they going to take the cat from me? Are they going to euthanize the cat? I'm terrified about taking my pet to the Humane Society.
I don't know the answer to that. Maybe call in ahead of time. I need to say you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.
Well, I'm glad the hello?
You're on.
Yeah, I'm glad the conversation has been started because there's a sickness at that facility with people's attitudes. I think that what they're trying to do is control humans through the control of these animals.
I think that's very clear.
Yes.
And if I can say one thing, this is the teacher in me coming out. We are the pigs and the goats' apex predator. That they were brought here, and the pigs were brought here on the canoes. There is no natural predator.
Exactly.
And so if they are not hunted, even they would eventually die off because they would eat away the natural environment. So there isn't a natural position in there to be keeping their numbers in check. So
no, and everywhere I go, I see the devastation that pigs are causing, and never mind the goats. If you want to see the horrific evidence of the goat depredation, you drive up Waimea Canyon Drive on your way to Coquay, and you come up about at the 3.5-mile mark, and you will be able to look down into the canyon, looking from south up to north, and look at the canyon on the left side, the Ni'ihau side of the river. You will see a dramatic transition zone from forested land to red dirt. And that red dirt is caused by goats that came down in the drought of 1997 to 2002, the five-year drought. The goats came down and embedded themselves on these hillsides and basically have multiplied to the point where they've turned a formerly vegetated canyon wall into red dirt. So it's extremely clear the devastation that these animals are causing.
And on that point, goat hunting opens July 3rd to August 13th. People can register with the Department of Land and Natural Resources by this Friday if they want to be part of the goat hunt. That can be arrows or guns, archery or guns. And then these goats become food, not just shot off the cliffs with helicopters or whatever way they eliminate them.
Indeed.
And I know there are professional hunters that are up there for the Nature Conservancy and stuff, but it's better for these animals to be shared out in food than simply killed.
Another thing that I think people who haven't grown up in this culture don't especially appreciate is I'm out in the mountains a lot, and again, all my family, friends, people all around me are doing this, in some cases, every weekend. You probably cannot appreciate just how beneficial it is to a human being to get out into those woods, especially parents who take their kids with them, and teach them the ropes, you know, from whatever age they care to go. There's something extraordinarily beneficial to the mind, the health of a human mind when they're out there and engaging with their family, with their ohana, and working to put food on the table. I believe it makes for a far more peaceful human being who wouldn't otherwise have an outlet for the energies that, you know, that come with growing up.
Yes.
So there's that. But the other thing that I want to finally bring back around to the Humane Society was there was a post on the Facebook page of a friend of mine, a woman from the mainland, and this was basically the post. You cannot be an environmentalist and eat meat. And I just went, what?
Right.
I was like, why don't you pull that sanctimonious carrot out of your Okole and come over here and help us kill and eat the goats and the pigs that are devastating our forests.
Right. So we are all growing to be more aware together, and thank you for helping with that.
Yes, and thanks again to your guest because man alive, what's the name of your organization?
I'm really not an organization any longer, but I'm a community service, and it's Kauai Rescue Reserve Ranch.
Kauai Rescue Reserve
Yes,
Ranch?
Correct.
I'm going to write this down, and I'm going to tell all my friends about it.
You can get me on Facebook, and you can come in as my personal friend and see everything on Sheila Young.
Okay, and I'll tell all of my friends because we need more people like you who think like you and realize that the world is not Walt Disney. And there are consequences to your sanctimony regarding the sacredness of all life on this earth, because without soil, we're not going to live on this island very much longer.
That's right. Thank you so much for sharing all of your valuable manoa.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye. So We are going to transition. We have a couple more callers holding. They will come in, and you're listening to KKCR. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man, 808 Equipment Rental, and what's going on with the Royal Hawaiian community.
The Royal Hawaiian Band is returning to Kauai after 87 years on Saturday, June 20th at Prince Kuhio Park in Lauai. The Royal Hawaiian Band has been entertaining in Hawaii and around the world since its inception in 1836 by Kamehameha III. The performance is also a tribute to Prince Kuhio, who was born and raised in Koloa. Special guests includes Poleni Vaughn and Kimo Kaho Ano. For tickets, call Kauai Museum 245-6931.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456.
808 Equipment Rentals, providing tractor, bobcat, and BCS tiller services island-wide, including pasture mowing, garden bed raising, vegetation removal, terracing, gravel spreading, and more. 808 Equipment Rentals in Moloa'a. 823-1000.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and our underwriters really are what make this possible to be on the air. We have a caller holding. We have one last caller. It's got to be very brief on this last topic because I have another caller for our topic that we're moving on to. Aloha, you're on the air.
I always draw the short straw when it comes to time on your show. What I want to point out is, getting tickets for leash law on some of these hunting dogs, I think should be challenged because I'll give you an example. If a tourist or somebody grabs a dog that's sitting at a shirt that a hunter left for it, if it's marker, scent marker, and the dog comes over there, there's usually some food or water, blah, blah, and if somebody grabs the box, brings it to the Humane Society or whatever, and they issue a ticket, one game warden wouldn't issue a ticket to a hunter while he's in that hunting district with his dog off the leash. In fact, quite the contrary. I see on Wahine with a couple laps one time, even with leashes, getting on ticket because everybody forgets that the arboretum really is on hunting zone past the check-in box. And actual regular dogs don't belong at the arboretum. And I actually asked the game warden, oh, wow, she's like, how come? And she told me straight, only hunting dogs allowed in there. And so if somebody's grabbing a dog out of a hunting district and then turning them in, who gives the authority to the Humane Society?
Good
that
point.
That can be looked into and challenged as a solution right there.
Good point.
That they may not have the authority to do that.
Well, I think that's a really good point, and thank you so much for sharing it.
Okay,
aloha. Okay, so we are going to shift our topic a little bit here. We've got a caller holding. I believe he is on the air now. Dan, are you there?
I am here. Aloha, Felicia. Thanks again for having me on.
You're welcome, and if your radio is on now, I will have you turn that off. I think I hear an echo. I wanted to give the listeners a little bit of background. We're moving over to talking about this constitutional amendment for the United States that is reversing Citizens United, which states that the corporate citizen has the freedom of speech and it can be expressed through unlimited spending in the elections. And so Dan is my friend from Hawaii Island, who has been a very big part of trying to help create this movement. We're going to be hearing from our council chair, Mel Raposo, very soon. He might join you, Dan, on the phone. Last week, we had It came up in Kauai County Council for a resolution to pass this. We were almost unanimous. We started to choke over the fact that one of our council members who works for one of the companies, the very big land companies, he coincidentally was uncomfortable with the whereas in there that says, whereas corporations have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders, so profit has to come above the public good. Something to that effect. So there was a leg in there that is speaking to why we want to have this resolution that is in tandem with municipalities across the country. This letter, this resolution is directed towards our state government and our county government saying, hey, this is the position we're taking. This is going to come up again, not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. But so Kauai Island is trying to join the chorus that says we want essentially campaign finance reform. And really all of this, even though it seems really different than dogs and animals and stuff, it all relates. It's like, how do we control our communities? Who has the final say? So Dan, with that introduction, tell us what is happening in Hawaii Island, the state of Hawaii, and the United States on this issue.
Last time I spoke with you, the Wolfpack organization had a resolution before the Hawaii legislature calling for a constitutional convention to propose amendments and to get the money out of politics. And I don't know if this has happened in other states where they went to, but the Hawaii House voted unanimously on that and passed it. And we had, I believe it was 10 or 11 sponsors and co-sponsors in the Senate. We only have 25 senators over there. And the chairman of the committee, I can't remember what his name is right now, but it died in committee. We just never really had a chance to get the support and get the votes out there for it. But I think when he kills it like that, by pigeonholing it, basically, it's pretty obvious that there would have been the support to get that out of committee. It's really upsetting that just one member of both houses could potentially veto this process entirely. But if that had passed, it would have been a big deal, because Hawaii is the only state that hasn't applied for a convention to propose amendments. And
is that right? I haven't looked for a while. We are the only state at this point?
Yeah, there have been 49 states over the last 200 odd years that have applied for
collectively
a convention to propose amendments.
Okay.
For different reasons, sometimes nothing was specified, and they've done that over 700 times. In fact, just recently, we had a rule that passed in the House of Representatives by Steve Stivers from Ohio, and I was pushing Congress to get an official count, and they just changed that rule and posted these things online for the first time, and they're now acknowledging them publicly for transparency. But in a bold move of idiocy, they decided to only go back to the year 2014 and decided that the rest of them they wouldn't count. So starting from 2014 on, they'll keep track of these things, and then if the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Bob Goodlatte, decides at his discretion, basically, he'll acknowledge past applications, which we would really like to see that, because we firmly believe that with that many applications out there, it would force their hand and they would have to call this convention. And really, they're just dodging it right now. So, if I could, I would urge your listeners to call Bob Goodlatte in Washington, D.C. There's a couple of numbers they can reach him at.
And Bob Goodlatte?
Yeah, he's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee from Virginia. And the number you can reach him at is 202 225-3951 or 5431. You got two numbers there.
Okay, can you repeat that again? 202-225-3951. 51. And the other one?
The other number is 202-225-5431. One is his personal office, and the other one is to the Judiciary Committee office. And what we want to say is please acknowledge those applications for a convention prior to the year 2014 if you call up there.
Okay, and now let's switch it to the people who don't understand the political thing. This, I appreciate your nuanced and deep knowledge. And I want to acknowledge that you have a role in allowing this to happen as a result of your simply reminding the White House or the Congress, I'm not sure which, that they weren't looking at and counting the states that were asking for a change. But tell us why we need this change. In my opinion, this is about as important as the women's right to vote.
Well, absolutely. It's all about representation, and we feel it from the county level to the state and federal level that this system does not represent us. It's a fallacy that we live in a representative democracy. That's not the reality at all. And one of the big problems is that there is representation of the top bidders. We have a government that's basically coin-operated. Where the highest bidders get the policies they want. And as you said earlier, the corporations are allowed to spend unlimited amounts of money to do that. So it doesn't quite work that way for the average citizen, unfortunately.
Right. And so there's actually been studies on that. There was a really good graph that I saw that when you look at what the needs are of that 0.01%, the probability of them getting their needs met is really strong. And with the common man or common person, I want a common woman, common person's perspective, there's almost not a corollary. Have you seen that graph?
I think I know which one you're talking about. Represent Us put that out recently, I believe.
Yeah, and there's a lot that's there. Is that the very, very wealthy are able to pretty much influence all of our politics. You know,
right.
They get what they want.
Exactly. And even if the politicians are elected with the best of intentions that demand to appeal to the funders of the election, still kind of looms over you in that next election, and you do have to win their support next time around, or it's still going to be a battle. We saw a couple of elections like that just in our local county politics on the Big Island.
So has the Big Island done a resolution to support this effort?
To tell you the truth, I haven't seen anything of any substance, really. It sounds like what you folks are doing over there is fantastic. It's an initiative on the ballot coming up? Or
no, it's a resolution. And so we had, he might be coming on the air right now, our chair of our county council. We had Kipukai Kualii, he's one of our council members, and Joanne Yukimura. They introduced a resolution. Mel, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you. We're talking about the resolution that came out last week, and we have a person that has been very involved with this at a national level who is from Hawaii Island on the line with us. Can you explain to the listener and to Dan the intention of this resolution?
The intention of the resolution, as I understand from the co-introducer, is really to highlight what we believe was a ruling that the wrong ruling made by the Supreme Court regarding corporations, that the ruling was that they were considered the same as people and that money was a form of free speech, and I think that was the basis of the resolution asking for that to be overturned. It was a lengthy resolution, but I think, you know, the bottom line is that those were the concerns, I think, from the introducers as well as the other members of the council.
Yeah, there were 15 whereases in there, so we started to, like, kind of in the room go back and forth on a few of the elements in there. But for the most part, I would say all seven of our council people are on board to want to give a unanimous, you know, that we would like to see our representatives go towards the state and say, yes, this is, I mean, our state representatives being put into the national voice saying we would like to have that looked at and changed with a constitutional amendment.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always nice to have the unanimous support. And, you know, I'm optimistic that that will happen, you know, once the councilors get a chance to iron out their ideas and hopefully reach a compromise where we can actually get a 7-0 vote.
Yeah, so Dan was saying he was pleased that our county's doing this. There is a movement across the state that's been working on it. Dan is involved. What's the name of your group called again, Dan?
Yeah, we're ArticleV.org for Article 5 of the Constitution. That's the part of the Constitution that explains how to amend the Constitution. So we took our name after that, and ArticleV.org, you can look us up there.
And so there's two ways to amend the Constitution. Either the Congress, the House, and the Senate can come up with enough, a supermajority that vote for that, or we can have, was it three-quarters of the states come up with one?
Two-thirds of the states will apply for a convention. They specifically wrote it so that the states are applying for a convention. They had originally written it so that they... that it would take two-thirds of the states proposing an amendment, but then they changed that and made it so it was a convention so that people would have a chance to hear both sides of those issues. But, yeah, two-thirds of both houses propose an amendment. Then it goes out to the states for ratification, and right now three-quarters of the states would be 38 states. And last I checked, I think it was about 24, 26 Democrats and Republicans. So when you consider that whether an amendment proposal comes out of a convention or from Congress, it only takes 13 states to veto any proposal out there. So whatever comes down that pipeline is going to have to be acceptable to both sides. And it's one of those things that I think we really need to keep in mind, too, is that this has to be a proposal that has significant unanimity of opinion.
So you might be in agreement with our council member, Conashiro, who wanted it to be as simple as possible for as many yeses. Is that correct? Like we have a I like what we have, but when we want to get as many states as possible to be able to be in unanimity, or everybody has the same perspective or is in agreement. It's always nice when there is broad agreement for an idea. So you're saying keep it simple?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not sure I know if the right solution is on paper yet. But I trust the process, and I hope that the end result is what we were hoping for. But I'm not sure how it affects the unions, and I would, you know, if it is a little bit complicated, I wouldn't be surprised. It's a tricky issue. We're talking about how to control political speech in a constitution that allows freedom of speech.
Well, I think one easy thing is to say that corporations aren't citizens. Human beings are citizens, and to me that's a, you know, a very big step.
Right. Well, but then what are, so I know many unions are not corporations, they're more like clubs, but then again, how would those groups be affected by those kinds of things. And
I see what you're saying.
Hash them out as a nation, because I don't feel that neutering the power of labor is in our best interest either.
Right. So this is asking for a broad convention. So thank you, caller, for calling in. Dan Marks from Hilo. And Mel, I'm going to keep you on the line. Mel, are you there? Mel?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So with Mel, you're not feeling that well? Otherwise, he was going to be in the room with us here. How are you doing?
I'm trying to fight a cold.
So there are a number of issues that are also coming up besides this. One that I think is we'll be doing this. We're going to be doing two stronger topics on this next week. But tomorrow, will you be at the council speaking about the rescues, the fire department rescues?
Yeah, that's actually on for first meeting.
Okay, we're struggling a little bit with the phone. Are you able to move a little bit or anything to get that stronger? So that's going to be on there. There's a number of issues that are on the agenda tomorrow. You know, and what I want to bring up that to me is one of the biggest issues, I live on the North Shore, so to me on the North and the Upper East Side, but probably one of our very, very biggest issues is people not able to continue to have housing. We have been talking about the Humane Society, and, you know, I feel like people aren't too far behind where our animals are at, where we are struggling just to be able to find a home to try and be able to do things. I see that Kauai Planning Action Alliance has got a meeting coming up. Are you aware of that meeting?
No, I'm not.
They've got Kauai Planning Action Alliance is a good group, and they've got a really great graphic for it. It's a hand squeezing out a house, and so the term is called squeezed out. And they are having a workshop on the 25th, Thursday, and it is at from 2 to 4 p.m. They're really trying to do a brainstorming on what's going on with our housing. And that, to me, is one of the biggest, most tough issues that we're going to be able to face up here. Do you have thoughts on that, Mel?
Well, you know, I think it's always been an issue, affordable housing, and, you know, we've been somewhat successful during development zoning applications where the council has been able to implement some housing conditions, affordable housing conditions. But, you know, when we don't have much development going on right now, which isn't a bad thing, but the fact of the matter is that it's very difficult to address the housing shortages because, you know, number one, the county doesn't really have land and the cost for housing is so expensive. And I know there's an effort to try to seek out some gap housing for the middle income. But, you know, all levels of the economic, scale is, you know, having problems with housing. And, you know, the market dictates the cost of housing, and it's always a difficult thing to control. So.
Yeah, it's pretty hard, and it's not easy to see simple solutions. And, you know, sometimes there's people almost are needing to camp, try to figure something out. I've really been following what's happening on Oahu, where they have the sit lie laws, where people aren't even allowed to sit or lie down. People are really being pushed off into the margins. They're trying to come up with some ideas, like having they have like 100 spaces worth of room in containers. There, I think they have 25 containers. It's four people to a divided container that they're putting on Sand Island, you know, so they'll be able to help 100 people. I would say that this is, we're on the front end of a crisis. We're well into it, but I think it's going to get far worse. And it's something that we really have to be able to figure out some way to address it. I don't know we can have interior camping sites or, you know, what we're going to do, because people, you have to be able to put your head down somewhere, and we don't have the millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars to build everybody a place to live. We've got some affordable housing going in right here near KKCR, and, you know, I think it's all right. People call and complain about what it looks like, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, you know, how long have we tried to get something here? Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the housing, the principal affordable housing, and, you know, it's different. It doesn't look like your traditional housing, but, again, you know, as I've researched around the country on what other jurisdictions are doing, and you look at what they're doing with containers, shipping containers, converting them into living, you know, accommodations, and I think that's the way we got to start looking, and you know, outside of the box, because there's no way we can build a home for everyone. There's no way we can build a fancy home for everyone. But I think to address the issues, you know, the shit lie bill in Honolulu, you know, I cannot believe that that's even passing. I can't believe that they're going that far. But, you know, there's a problem on Oahu. But, you know, I think you look at the other options. I mean, tent, you know, creating a tent city like the military. I mean, I've slept in huge tents with cots and heaters in very cold weather, and it was comfortable. I think for the homeless that, you know, are going through some rough times right now, I think any kind of structure, a place where they can, like you said, put their head down and stay warm and dry, I think that's, you know, we got to start there and just accommodate some of the needy that don't have nowhere to go, and not stop reaching for the stars.
Yeah, not make something so great and then not make it be a crime if they're sleeping in their car. You know, we have to find, how do we make it work? You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. We have Council Chairman Mel Raposo on the phone and Sheila Young and Ian Cowden in the studio. What are your main goals, Mel, in this next couple windows? How can the people help the county? What are you looking at? What do you feel like is the main pieces that we need to do to move forward in a positive way?
In the housing?
Housing or you know, we've got a lot of issues that we're talking about, but housing or where, like, I'm wanting to give you an element here where you can speak to what you think is most important rather than me feeding to you what I think is most important, because, of course, I have my hit list.
You know, I think the housing is a good place to start, because I think you bring up some valid points, and you know, it's one that I think, number one, you're exactly right. We've got to stop making criminals out of these people that are just having a rough time, and I just had an email regarding the county evicting a bunch of people out of, I believe it was Salt Pond Park, at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yes.
You know,
and we probably are going to have a guest from one of those people.
Yeah, I'm following up on that. I mean, I don't understand why we would do that. I cannot imagine what. I just, you know, but anyway, that's where we got to start, and start not treating these people as criminals. You know, they need a place to stay. They need a place to sleep. And those are county facilities. Now, I'm not saying let's open up all the facilities for homeless people, but we're not providing them an alternative.
And it's dehumanizing, and an impact even of our tax rate is that we are getting more and more investor housing. We have so many vacant houses and so many homeless. I think that, you know, the North Shore is kind of the canary in the coal mine. My guest in the studio, Sheila, has a question or comment.
You know, it's interesting that we're having this topic. I was just living in my car for 4 months, and it was humiliating. But I came up with an idea. I thought, you know, it would be great if we had, like, sort of like mobile parks. You know how they had those mobile home parks, but sort of like a place where somebody could create an off-the-grid, mobile type of a home that they could just pull into a lot or a piece of property. And if we had, like, slots of, like, say, 10 per parcel, then people could actually have sort of off-the-grid type mobile homes that they could just put onto these pieces of property and rent the actual property itself, you know, vacant, to put their structures on, and off the grid solar electricity. And I thought, you know, I would participate in something like that, with gardens in the middle for the people, and, you know, and it's, I don't know, anyway.
I think you're hitting on what I spoke of earlier regarding those shipping containers that have been converted on the mainland into very nice accommodations. And you're exactly right. We got to start thinking that away.
Mm-hmm. Because otherwise we're not going to have any residents. We're not going to end up with anybody who can really live here. We have this very profound challenge of how do we manage, the uber wealthy being able to just drive the prices up so much. It's not easy.
Yeah, and again, the market dictates that, and it's very difficult when we're dealing with, the kinds of monies that these guys are spending on purchasing property here. It's affecting the whole island, and you're right. More and more of our people are moving away, not coming back. My son is one of them. He's in Oregon. He's not coming back home.
I'm sorry.
He can't afford it.
Yeah.
So, it's an issue that, and our housing department works hard on these things, but again, without the resources, I know that the shipping companies, Matson, and they do donate those containers to nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take the county working with the private nonprofit sector, to work together to get to the bottom of this. And, you got to remember, a lot of these people choose to be homeless too. I know personally of people that choose to live at the beach. And though that's fine as well, but I'm talking about the other ones, the ones that don't have a choice. And especially those with children that, we got to get them in a shelter. We got to get them in a structure that keeps them, like I said, warm and dry,
Yeah. I feel this is a huge crisis, and it is something that I am confronted with almost daily, at least weekly, where I'm speaking to or comforting somebody who has almost no place to go. People are scared and people are stressed, and it is a very big issue. And these are people with basically jobs and functional lives. It's not that they don't work or that they just got off the plane. I mean, there are people who did just get off the plane and maybe don't have a job yet, but these are people who have lived here for a very long time, raised kids here. Mm-hmm. Pretty big issue. So I know you're not feeling well. I'm just looking down on the agenda for tomorrow. It looks like 8:30 is when the council is starting. Your main issues that are coming up are bringing a couple new people into these boards, is with the Charter Review Commission and the Fire Commission. I try and educate people about civics on this show. Those positions are way more important than people might realize. I see something coming up about barking dogs. I'm hoping it says that dogs can bark somewhat, because dogs bark.
That's going to be an interesting bill, because it's to repeal the barking dog ordinance.
Okay, I'm testifying. I'm for that. I mean, or maybe just soften it so it's allows a dog to be a dog to some degree.
Well, I think Councilmember Kagawa, when we had the original bill, I think he was the only one that voted against the barking dog ordinance, and he predicted that it was going to cause some larger problems in neighborhoods. In fact, it would pit neighbor against neighbor, because it would require this sort of a complaint filed and some kind of intervention by the Humane Society, and in essence, it's what has occurred. So he's initiating the bill that'll repeal that, and think of other ways to fix that. And I'm not sure how that's going to be accepted by the council members or the public. And we'll see. Tomorrow's another first reading bill, so we'll see how that goes.
And so if people want to testify, what time is the right time to show up?
8:30 is the commission interviews. And the council meeting will actually start at 9:00. We do have our lobbyists from Washington D.C. They'll be in tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to give us a briefing on the what's happening in D.C. and what opportunities are there, or what they've done for us. That should be an interesting discussion as well. And after that, I anticipate a relatively short meeting tomorrow. I couldn't tell you when the barking dog would come up, or there's also the discussion on a county manager system
Oh, right. Tomorrow. That's a big one.
Yeah,
okay.
That's going to be a big one. And I think, you know, that one's going to be interesting to follow as well. We've had a lot of emails and phone calls from people that want to take a look at that.
Well, I think it's always good to discuss these things.
I'm sorry?
It's always good to discuss these issues, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, that was my commitment to the members when I became the chair, was that, you know, I wasn't going to stop anybody from putting what they wanted on the agenda unless it was illegal. And this is one of those that, you know, may be very controversial, but you know what? The discussion is needed. I could honestly tell you, I don't know enough of that system, and very anxious to hear more. My thought is to create a subcommittee that'll explore and investigate, and do a lot of community outreach in all the communities to get the public's input on what we should do going forward.
Okay, and then just I'm going to let you go in just a moment, but I'm going to just toss out a few of the things that have come up recently. This past Friday, I was really pleased to see that the House of Representatives at the United States Congress did 2-1 resist the fast-tracking on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I think it is an intense impact on Hawaii. I am disturbed that that's even being promoted and pushed. But I don't know if you're following that very much, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership can have powerful impacts on us. It's basically an open trade agreement that's like North American Free Trade Agreement on steroids. So it supersedes nation states and certainly municipalities like ours. The Maui moratorium lawsuit went to court this week. And they're going to take about a month to decide. I'm going to have Kyle Smith come on the show very soon to discuss the Waimea decision and what's moving forward with that. So that's an important issue. And then the whale sanctuary, Mel, I don't know if you're following the whale sanctuary issue. We'll talk a little bit more when you're off the phone here. But that deadline is June 19th, and I did just spend a couple hours with them in there, understanding a little bit more about it. So
yeah, well, I would encourage you, and let me just go real quick. The Maui ruling, the judge's ruling, will be important. It'll be important for the state, and we're all anxious to see what happens there. But regarding the whale sanctuary expansion, I think it's important that people get involved. I went to a couple of those meetings. I met with them one-on-one with NOAA, and I got to tell you, I have some serious concerns about that. And I think people need to be educated and informed, and if they're concerned, let them know, because, you know, we want to protect the whales. We've got to understand that at this moment, they're trying to delist the whales. So what NOAA is doing is they're expanding the sanctuary to include multiple species, and in fact, even go inland. So we just got to make sure that we understand what they're trying to do, and that we're not misled to believing that it's something else. And I just, I'm glad you guys are raising awareness, because people got to know and they got to participate. So thank you for bringing that very important topic up.
You're welcome. And listeners could go to HawaiiHumpbackWhale.NOAA.gov, and they could go in there and comment. And we couldn't get them to push this date further, June 19th. I know it's a lot of really well-intended people who've worked really, really hard, and there's a lot of Hawaiian Kupuna who've been involved. I've become a cynic, so I'm always nervous about the federal government ideas. So we have just this Friday is the last day to comment, but people can always still stay involved. I'm going to have two of the members on the radio next week, and I see that the sanctuary is actually accepting applications for about five more seats on that advisory committee. That's commercial shipping, primary and alternate, Hawaii County, they need an alternate, Lanai Island, an alternate, a citizen at large, an alternate, education, tourism, and whale watching. Those are alternates. So there's still a way to be really pretty involved. And just for people to know, July 1st on Oahu at the Pagoda Hotel, the whole committee as a whole will be meeting. So thank you so much, Mel. I want to have you in here sometime.
Yeah, thank you. I apologize. I'm just a little under the weather right now, but I appreciate you allowing me to call in and sharing a little bit and looking forward to the next time.
Okay. Aloha.
Okay, aloha. Take care.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Jazz with John will be coming up in about 15 minutes. And we have a very patient caller. Thank you so much for holding.
Yeah, I will. I am very patient. And I would like to say thanks to Mel for coming in. You know, that's awesome that he called. I'm not coming in, but calling in, as you say. And, you know, and for Dan calling in. And I would like to point out that, you know, on top of the petition that I personally had gotten signatures for Citizens United, the language was clear and cut. And I think that's where the key is looking at what states have already adopted language to be recognized by Congress on this issue, and then trying to look at the state's language and incorporate those. You know, that would be the way. And at the county level, I personally don't think it has to be exact like that, as long as the essence of the county and as it represents its people gets to the state to urge the state to get on it, right? Because it really be, at the end of the day, the state's obligation to submit this to for the congressional convention. The other thing is, I know that the date is the 19th on that whale thing, but there's a 106 section, which I guess has to do with indigenous people, on June 22nd at Lihui Library at 10 in the morning. And that I got from this weekend. I went to the Ahumoku meeting for Puna District this Sunday at our meeting. And so I got that from Auntie Nani Rogers.
Okay, and then I do know that those aren't totally open meetings to the entire public.
They are not.
So it is that date, and you are correct, and it is really extended to people of Hawaiian bloodline. It's Hawaiian community.
No one they came from her, because she's of the Hawaiian community.
Yeah, it's the Hawaiian community, and particularly Hawaiian organizations, but Section 106 is for Hawaiians.
Well, maybe she was urging us as members of the Moku to go, I guess. Maybe that's what she was doing. I had not realized that it was kind of strict like that.
Okay.
You know, but I would like to end one thing, you know, the Niiau part of the whale sanctuary, you know, in its own language, it shows the true colors, and it states the sanctuary would allow managers, that would be whoever's controlling the sanctuary, to collect users, that's whoever's fishing or in that sanctuary, around Niiau. Right there I'm gonna end, because right there we cannot have that happen.
Okay, and then somebody had given me the piece of their statement. That this is somebody who does support the sanctuary, you know, because she feels that the Hawaii's ocean ecosystem is near a tipping point of non-recovery, and the impacts of pollution, development, fishing pressure, acidification, and climate change are endangering these populations, and the coral reefs are in crisis and lack agency protection. So she felt also, because this was a point on the military, a point that she felt was real important, is it would be good to show more goodwill and be wiser to establish a sanctuary within the expanded military boundaries and implement no-take zones with strictest regulations, so the military becomes the impacted party and demonstrates good neighbor and good stewardship of the ocean ecosystem. And the sanctuary shows credibility in its investment and ability to follow its mission. Caller, I totally love you. And you
that.
Call
the
a lot.
Is,
caller,
no, I,
caller,
I agree
caller,
that, but
caller. Matt, listen. I have a lot of callers waiting. I have a lot of topics waiting. And so I'm trying, and I got 10 minutes left.
No,
and
Larry, I
got to
wait. It was like 20 minutes.
But this is your third call. So I got to let these other people come in, because I'm getting texts. I get all these messages. People want to be able to share that they haven't been able to get on the air.
I'm sorry, but I just let them call it in. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to let you go, okay? Appreciate you. Another call, I mean, that people have tried to go bring in here is regarding the animal, the Humane Society. There's been a few employees put on administrative leave, and they are being put, there has been no response with all the information that should go in. So that's one comment that somebody has sent in to me. Another one of them is that the spay and neuter bus has not been equipped to go out to the community to provide the service because of the executive director. And the bus has been there for over a year. So that's another way that spaying and neutering is there. And John? Okay, I thought John. Do we have a caller on hold? Okay, this can be my last call. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hi, Felicia.
Hi.
Yeah, I tuned in late. I'm just calling to get some clarification. When I tuned in, you were talking about the corporations claiming rights as people.
Yes.
Or the First Amendment, or for First Amendment or Bill of Rights protections.
Yes.
The Bill of Rights, rights that were supposedly endowed by our Creator.
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't think corporations created the corporations. But nevertheless, specifically, what is that about? They're claiming free speech claim for what? For donation for money?
Yes, that money is money is a form of free speech, not directly to a candidate, but to a political action committee or a super PAC is another way. So it gives unlimited spending because money is seen as a speech. Matt, the last caller, was pretty funny in the meeting. He said, if they get unlimited funding, it's anything but free. You know,
yeah.
It was a good piece of humor there.
Okay, so now the position that the people are taking is against it, right?
Yes, the people are saying we need a constitutional amendment because we have to override the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has interpreted the corporations are citizens, and citizens are provided the right to free speech by the Bill of Rights, and money is speech for these corporations. So they want to say, hey, you know what? Money is not free speech, and these corporations aren't citizens. So
okay, so the citizens are looking for amendment only to address the money thing, the free speech thing.
Yes, it is. To address the citizenship of the corporations and the money. And so here's the challenge.
Okay.
When we have these constitutional conventions,
right.
We have to be very careful because we have almost not had one. And we've seen that 49 states have requested one. They weren't counting until the person who called in, Dan Mark, said, hey, why don't you count? So they go, oh, okay, well, then we'll count. So then they counted. And guess what? 49 states have asked for a constitutional convention. They've been able to avoid it throughout American history by simply not counting. And if that guy hadn't written that letter, they wouldn't have been counted yet. But when we have a constitutional convention, this is my bias, my personal concern is if we have an organization like American Legislative Exchange Council, if they aren't able to utilize an opportunity like that to hijack the whole thing and really do a lot of damage. So how do we make sure that we're just narrowly looking at that one issue?
Yeah, a constitutional convention could be very dangerous to what we have established already. You know, like I said, the Bill of Rights, rights that are endowed by our Creator. The Creator did. I think that's the position. The Creator didn't create the corporations. That should be the foundation of that position. But anyway, God bless. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. So, do we have another caller? We are going to have the County Council report in just another moment. Do we have one call? We can take one call, but they get about a minute. So, we'll take it in. Aloha, you're on the air. You got a minute.
Hi, Felicia. I just wanted to address one of the calls about the questions regarding the spay and neuter vehicle, and just to let everybody know that's scheduled to resume at the end of this month. Been in the works for a while, and that will be starting up again.
Okay, thank you. So that text that I've gotten, people call text right while I'm on the air here. So you're saying that might have been accurate, that it hasn't been running, but it is going to run very soon.
Correct, yes. They had some problems. And anyway, I know that it's scheduled for the end of the month. We had a meeting last Friday regarding it, and it's scheduled to resume.
Thank you, and thank you for being an Akamai caller and calling in with that important information.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. Sheila, thank you for coming in. Our show's just about up. You've got a minute.
I just want to say thank you to you, and I know this is a touchy subject, but, you know, I'm very happy to see that we're diving into this because it's going to make positive changes, so I'm stoked.
Great. And Ian, you can put the mic over here for a second. I want to say congratulations for graduating from high school this past weekend, and congratulations to all the graduates that are out there.
Thank you.
Do you have any thoughts on any of what we've spoken about today?
No, not too much.
Okay. I know he has a lot of thoughts, but he's recognizing we're at the end of the show. So thank you very much for listening. And so this is Felicia from Kauai Soapbox. Mahalo for listening.